Moncrief on News Talk.
Time now to bring some stories from some other parts of our planet. Jonathan de Burka Butler joins us once again. Afternoon, Jonathan.
John, how are you getting on?
Right, Sweden we're going to go to first, where they're going to wiretap children.
Yeah, so Sweden is going to, well, they're saying they're going to rush through legislation that will allow police to wiretap children under the age of 15. Now, it's an interesting story because I suppose when we think of Sweden, and I was only there recently, I was there in December, and it's a beautiful place, really clean, and you'd think it's very safe, but they've been really suffering with gang violence over the last number of years. Mm. I mean, we think of it as this kind of Nordic paradise, and in many respects it is, but they're really suffering with this gang violence, as I said. And so, for example, in January alone this year, there's been 30 bombings. Right, and I'm not just talking, you know, little bombs that, you know, might break a few windows and the like. I mean, these are big sticks of dynamite that are trying to take out families and rival gang members and the like. And it's really causing consternation. And many of the people that are involved are very young children, right? So part of what the Swedish authorities are trying to do in order to, you know, fight against this wave of crime is they're looking at introducing wiretapping children under the age of 15. And they're also looking at reducing the age of criminal responsibility from 15 to probably around something like 12 or 13. So that raises the questions. Will that just mean that these kingpins, these criminal kingpins, will just target children who are younger?
Yeah.
It's one way of dealing with the problem, but whether it'll work or not is another question.
Yeah, no, I mean, in Ireland it happens that criminal gangs use kids as couriers and the like. Mm-hmm. So presumably these children aren't the kingpins. They're not the people they really want to arrest.
No, not at all. And so I suppose you could argue that's why they're trying to, you know, bring in this legislation to wiretap them. Now, I wonder, does that word wiretap, when you think of listening in on phones, but obviously in the modern era, I suspect that means intercepting text messages and the like as well. It seems that in an awful lot of these cases that the offers are simply advertised on social media platforms like Telegram and the like, where somebody will, again, a criminal gang leader will put in an ad into Telegram or various other social media spaces and say, I need a hit done. This is the price. Huh. Anybody want to do it? And they'll come and they'll accept it. And now I was looking at some a report, I think it was done by Sky. This was from a couple of years ago, and they can get something like €75,000 per hit. And if you're a poor kid, you know, with not many prospects, and there are people like that in Sweden, believe it or not, you know, getting 75 grand for carrying out a hit is quite a hefty amount of money, particularly if you're not going to go to prison for it.
Yeah. The people who are running these gangs, are they in Sweden?
So in an awful lot of cases they are, but it seems that the focus of recent reports and what the, and again, other policies that the Swedish authorities are trying to introduce is focusing on leaders that live abroad. So in places like Turkey and Iran, Iraq and the United Arab Emirates, who, you know, are obviously very high up the chain and have underlings based in Sweden and who want to get rid of their rivals. And so they're controlling things from abroad. So another element of this is that they're, you know, looking at working with these countries to try and extradite these gang leaders back to Sweden. But of course, it only occurred to me earlier there that Sweden and Turkey aren't getting on particularly well diplomatically. So it might be harder than you think. And Turkey, for instance, will probably want something in return.
Now, before there's a load of texts appearing in front of you, would these be mostly migrants in these gangs?
Yeah, so look, it is, and that's undeniable. And that's also, and although there are several commentators who are saying that, you know, middle-class white kids are getting involved now as well. But it is predominantly migrants or migrant families, second generation, that are involved. And of course, that's fueling other debates within Sweden, which is leading to, you know, the popularity of far-right parties in the country. So that's another element of it as well.
And now, is there much pushback against it? Are there, like, human rights groups saying you shouldn't lower the, or is there a general acceptance that this is a severe problem?
There's a general acceptance that it's a severe problem. There's no doubt about that. I'm sure there has been pushback, as there always will be, because that is the role of these civil liberties organisations. I haven't seen any. And judging by the last election and the current government, which is centre-right, but tilting over to the right, I would say that there is a general acceptance that something needs to be done around this already.
Right. Okay, Argentina we're going to go to next, where more centre-right action from the looks of this. They're getting rid of the crime of femicide.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing. I couldn't have put it any other way. And this is coming straight from the top. This is Javier Milei. So this is a man who, during his campaign, said that he wasn't going to apologise for having a penis. He later went on to apologise for its size, but he didn't. That's fake news, sir. But anyway, he seems to be, if I can put it bluntly, quite anti-women, or at least he would say maybe pro-men. Mm. All right, and he has done several things since he's come to power in late 2023. He's got rid of the Ministry of Women. He's dissolved the Undersecretariat for Protection Against Gender Violence. He's bringing in other things like he's getting rid of labour quotas for sexual minorities, etc., etc., etc. But this is one thing that he has now announced, where he's getting rid of femicide, taking it out of Argentina's penal code. Okay, and this was announced by the justice minister, who said that they were going to eliminate femicide from the Argentine penal code. And he added that feminism was a distortion of the concept of equality. Now, this comes off the back of something that Milei said at Davos. If you don't mind, I'll quote him. He said, "Equality before the law already exists in the West. We've reached the point that if a woman is killed, it is called femicide, and this carries more serious punishment than if you kill a man simply based on the sex of the victim, legally making a woman's life worth more than that of a man."
And why was it put in there in the first place? Was there a problem?
There was a problem.
Women being murdered.
Yes, there was, as there is all over the world, right? The problem is that although the majority of murders, okay, are the majority of victims in murders are men across the world, right? 60% of women are killed by their partners or family members, as opposed to 12% by their which are men, okay,
yeah.
As victims. So this was brought in 2012 to focus the mind and the culture against gender-based violence. And that's what the difference is all about, okay? And now he wants to reverse that because he says that it's already covered by homicide, so we don't need it.
Okay.
That's his point.
Right, DRC, things are getting, that poor, unfortunate country, more fighting there and... a few players on its borders getting involved in this, it seems.
Yeah, and that is why it's of major concern. It's already of major concern because a lot of people are dying and about 6 million people have been displaced. But it's getting more coverage now because it looks like other actors in the region, well, they've been involved for a while, but it's beginning to get to the point where it might, you know, ramp up quite significantly. So in the last week or two, about 1,000 people have been killed in eastern DRC, right? This was when there was a little bit of coverage of it. A rebel group called M23, which had been around for about 12 or 13 years, they're mainly Tutsis, okay? So the ethnic group Tutsis, they're made up of that group, came into Goma and they have taken the city. So this is in the eastern DRC, near the border with Rwanda. And so... the UN are basically saying that Rwanda are giving aid to M23 and so are the government of the DRC. So this means that Paul Kagame, even though he denies it, so he's being the president of Rwanda,
yeah,
even though he denies it, is involved here, right? Mm. There's about 4,000 Rwandan troops involved in this as well. Why are they doing that? Okay, so Kagame, first of all, he denies it, okay? But he's saying... we're doing it because there have been problems in the past where Hutus have attacked Tutsis. We all remember the genocide that happened in Rwanda. And he's saying that all M23 are doing are protecting that ethnic group. Okay, so thereby putting a nice bit of a guilt trip on the international community not to intervene here. But most people believe that because there is gold in them there hills, as you usually put it,
yeah,
okay, that is really what he's after. And what's happening here is that they're taking control of the mines. They're exporting the product over into Rwanda, which is then going out of Rwanda, and they're getting the money for that.
Mm.
Okay? So that's the real reason behind it, we think. So at the moment, they've taken over Goma. They just announced this morning, M23, that they were going to have a humanitarian ceasefire. And we know that at the end of this week, Kagame and Felix Tshisekedi, who's the leader of the DRC, are going to have emergency talks in Tanzania, I think it is, on Saturday, to see what they can do about taking this forward. So it's interesting that Kagame is denying his involvement, but he's meeting Tshisekedi for peace talks.
To see. But Goma is part of the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Yes.
There's no dispute about that, or is this a kind of attempt at annexation?
I wouldn't say that far yet.
Yeah.
But there is certainly, I mean, there's over 100 military groups or rebel groups active in this particular area.
Mm.
And so the DRC has never really controlled this part of the world, even though it is on its map, if that makes sense.
Yes,
I would say for about 30 or 40 years, it hasn't controlled this part of the world, or at least it has sporadically.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Yeah, and the timing of this is, might this be because the eyes of the world are elsewhere at the moment?
I don't know, to be honest. I think the eyes of the world are never really on Africa.
Yeah.
Let's be honest about it.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm not sure what the timing of it is to do with. I know that the military of the DRC has been significantly weakened in the last couple of months. So that might be something to do with the success that M23 are having at the moment. But I think probably Kagame is seeing an opportunity here. But what that will lead to, I don't know.
Right, Pakistan we're going to go to next. Another one of those really tragic, horrific stories. This is about a man who killed his daughter over TikTok.
Yeah, it sounds ridiculous, but that's exactly what happened. This is a man by the name of Anwar Ul Haq, and he was charged with murder after he admitted to shooting his daughter, Hira. This was in the city of Quetta, which is in Balochistan. We've spoken about it a few times before. And what's interesting about this one is that this family had actually lived in the United States for 25 years. So that means that this girl, Hira, who was 13, okay, grew up in the United States. So presumably, although, let's say, the values of her family might have been instilled in her, she did still come from the culture of the United States, where kids are on TikTok and they're on social media and they're doing various different things. They went back to Pakistan, and obviously the father tried to stop her from recording herself or performing or whatever it was she was doing on TikTok, and she wouldn't do it. And so, because she had, inverted commas, dishonored the family, he decided to take a gun to her and shot her. And so now he's been arrested for that. It beggars belief.
Yeah, and he admits this, does he?
He admitted it. Now, initially he said that somebody else had done it, but then they got a confession out of him. So now what the authorities have to decide is, was this or was this not an honour killing, right? Mm. So it used to be the case up until 9 or 10 years ago that if it was an honour killing, you could be forgiven. Your family could, you'd be prosecuted, but your family could say, oh, it's okay.
Mm.
So you'd have this perverse situation where a father could shoot a daughter and then the mother would come in and say, ah, he's grand.
Yeah.
And he'd get out, okay? But you can't do that anymore. So his legislation has been changed since 2016. So it has to be discovered whether he and I think his brother-in-law is involved as well, or at least he's been arrested. Will be charged and eventually convicted under that law. And if they are, it'll be life in prison.
Yeah, and honour killings are still a severe problem.
Huge problem. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And mostly is it women who get killed in honour killings?
I don't need to answer that, do I?
Yeah,
I know,
yeah,
sorry
yeah.
To
well,
be
no, it's just because there's no such thing as femicide, apparently.
There you go. Yeah, exactly.
Right, Australia we're going to go to finally. And this is about a man who was cleared of rape because he has a thing called sexsomnia.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so sexsomnia, we'll start there, is apparently a medical condition where people exhibit sexual behaviour during sleep. I would have thought that most people sometimes exhibit sexual behaviour during sleep. But anyway.
Presumably, this is acting on it.
Well,
yes.
There you go. Well, this is what we're going to find out here, right? So this is a 40-year-old man from Sydney. The background to this is that he went out drinking with a woman who hasn't been named, obviously, at a cocktail bar. They came back to his apartment at 1 a.m. Okay, they had a bath together. Then she fell asleep on his bed and she woke up to find him on top of her having sex with her at 6 a.m. She wasn't happy. She pushed him off and she got up and left the apartment. Okay, and then pressed the charges. And the DPP took a case against him, right? Now, what we know is, and what both sides accepted, was that the woman was asleep and that he did have sexsomnia. So there was no dispute over that.
Right.
So the dispute was whether, and this is what the jury had to decide, was whether he was awake or was he having an episode of sexsomnia during this alleged rape.
Mm.
Okay, that's what they had to decide. The trial lasted for 7 days and the jury went in and they started the deliberations. They came back and they asked two questions, right? And this is where it gets kind of interesting, right? So the first question was, they asked the judge about the consequences of committing crimes while a person was unconscious, so asleep, effectively. Mm. And the judge said to them that somebody could not be found guilty of a crime they did unconsciously. And he said there was no current laws, rules or regulations about having sexsomnia or doing something while having the medical condition. And he warned the jury that they should not be determining a case based on laws it wished were in place, but instead on current laws.
Yes.
So that's the first thing he said. Mm. They said, okay, that's fine. They came back and then they asked what sort of evidence there could be to prove that someone was awake. They also asked if there was insufficient evidence, why was the case prosecuted and why did it come before a jury?
Mm.
To which the judge replied, not my problem. That's the problem of the DPP's problem. So it's not for you to decide why they brought the case. So the jury went back and said, not enough here. This guy's free to go. And they acquitted him.
Okay. That's extraordinary. That really is extraordinary. Right. Okay. So what should we look out for over the next week or so?
Yeah. So coming days, obviously, big news today. Donald Trump, if he's taking a break from imposing tariffs on people, is meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu in Washington. So that'll be interesting to see what comes out of that and the body language and all that kind of thing. Saturday, then, an interesting development there. The Patriots for Europe, which is a group of right-leaning organisations, shall we say. Some of them, Le Pen is involved as well in that. They're holding an event in Madrid, interesting, former home of Franco, called Make Europe Great Again. So get used to MEGA from now on, Sean. And then on Sunday, the Super Bowl, the Kansas Chiefs take on the Philadelphia Eagles, I believe.
Jonathan, thanks a million. Thanks. As ever, Jonathan De Burka Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.